Welcome to Day Zero Update for November 12th, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brian Perkins.
And I'm Daniel Victor.
And yeah, we've got a busy week this week. It's not one full of tons of news, but we do have a lot of important and interesting news. We got a new piece of hardware out of Valve. We got a game being canceled that people were looking forward to. We got some sales numbers from Spider-Man and Mario Brothers. And yeah, maybe some news on when you might see the next GTA.
Maybe.
And some results of Elon Musk's fuckery on PlayStation, much like Xbox earlier this year. We'll tell you a little bit about that. And all that, but before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And for me, I have been playing some Like a Dragon Gaiden, The Man Who Erased His Name. I think that's the full name there. Yeah, this is an interesting game because it takes place in and around and after takes place after Yakuza 6, leading up to and during and after the events of Yakuza Like a Dragon, Yakuza 7, and I guess leads into Infinite Wealth, Yakuza 8, essentially. And this focuses on Kiryu, where I guess at the end of Yakuza 6. So this is a problem with this game is that it doesn't always give you it just assumes you know what's going on in all the previous games, which maybe is a bit much, but also I don't know, it could use maybe a quick like refresher of like, if you have not played all the games in this series, here's what's been going on. Especially in like Yakuza 6, because I guess at the end of that he gets shot saving somebody. And this sort of starts with the conversation that he has with somebody after that, involved in some Yakuza organization, group, whatever, where he knows about things that they would like to not get out. So they offer him a bunch of money, and he does them one better if they have him legally declared dead. And, you know, just use that money to pay for his, you know, care, I guess, from then on. He will kind of call it even, essentially. And he ends up living at like a Buddhist temple kind of thing, just chilling out. But they occasionally on, you know, ask him to do some jobs for them as like, well, we're doing you a solid here and you're doing us a solid. So why not help us out? This kind of thing, but being like also, you know, no matter what you do, you can't let anybody know that you're still alive. Which starts off with a gig that he's doing for them. And there's this whole complicated thing going on where they're helping out some quote unquote terrorists in one of the other Asian countries, I believe. I don't think they say where at, but somebody that they have some connection to that are they're sending them some money in the form of gold bars or something like that. And they have this whole complicated setup with a bunch of security and all that. And immediately after being like, well, you can, you know, walk around a bit before we get started here. And some asshole immediately is like, hey, you're, you know, Kiryu, aren't you? You're the dragon of Dojima. He just starts telling everybody that he's, you know, not dead actually and all this. And just, this is how they do the tutorial for learning how to fight. You fight them. And they're very much acting like, oh, he's an old man now, so we can probably kick his ass. And I feel like that's the start of every Yakuza game. Is somebody misunderstanding his whole thing. They just think they can beat the shit out of him. And he just proceeds to destroy them. And yeah, there's a little bit earlier before that, but this is sort of the main combat stuff as they start introducing all of that to you. You start with this agent style, I believe, before you get to the dragon style. That is sort of the classic sort of stuff you expect out of what Kiryu can do. And the agent style has this weird like whip thing almost like a Spider-Man's webs that he can like wrap around somebody and pull them around. It's a little bit weird. I haven't done enough of it using it to have a full understanding of how it works. You can kind of do like hold down the B button or circle button to kind of wrap it around them. And then if you keep holding it, he'll just yank it and they'll go flying off in somewhere. I'm not sure if there's like specific way to control that to like bring them to you or anything, but that's a decent way of like knocking people over and sort of cooling crowds for that kind of stuff. But as you might expect, that whole thing that's going on is a setup for something else that's going on. And that takes you to, I forget what the area is called, but the location of Like a Dragon, Yakuza Like a Dragon, that whole area. So you kind of go into there for your next big bit as you sort of recovered from this whole bad situation, as you might have some people that you can go to and sort of get your feelers out there for that. And that's pretty fun to kind of go around. Obviously, you don't have the mechanics of Like a Dragon where, you know, you're checking under the vending machines for change and that kind of stuff. It's just pure brawler stuff where you have people going around. You can just start fights with them and you get money out of that. And, you know, that's all well and good. You can run to shops and get some gear. It gives you like stat bonuses for defense and whatnot. So I guess you could grind it out because this isn't supposed to be a super long game. Maybe like 10 hours or so, depending on how much side stuff you want to do. But for what I played here, you're kind of doing some fights and then, you know, things happen that let you know more about what's going on. Because this is where I was at, you essentially run into that homeless camp that Ichiban starts at. And they're basically like, oh, there was this dude that used to be a nurse. He's hanging out over here. And some other dude that got shot, he's, you know, in there with him. He's working on him. So you're like, oh, okay. That's where we're at in terms of the Yakuza storyline and all that. So that's kind of neat with that. I believe you're not staying there forever, but I'm basically at the point where I went through a bunch of shit and basically trying to recover. And where I ended up is I was following sort of where they wanted me to go and ran into an arcade and start playing some of the stuff there, which they have a good bit of stuff, a lot of like weird stuff, because I'm guessing they are just adding stuff to the game that has not been in the previous games before. Because there's a lot of like 3D arcade stuff that's probably from the mid to late 90s that I've never heard of that I was sort of surprised to see. But I'm trying to see if I can pull up a list for some of the games here. Yeah, they got some Master System stuff. But arcade games I saw was like, see, there's Virtua Fighter 2, Sonic the Fighters, Daytona USA 2, that wasn't in the arcade I saw, Fighting Vipers 2, stuff like that. I found an arcade racing game that kind of had mechanics of like a combat, you know, motorcycle racing game, that kind of stuff where you could kick or punch to the left or right. I think it would automatically figure that out based on whether enemies were to your left or right. But you got to have that stuff. And I did like one full run on 100 yen. And so that was pretty good for that. But then I did some stuff in the UFO catcher machine, which between when I started playing the arcade game and going to the gacha machine, it changed all of them around. So the one that had like a bunch of Super Monkey Ball stuff in it was not there anymore. So I was a little bit surprised and annoyed. I could have probably asked the guy to change it out, but I didn't follow through with that. So, but yeah, that's, you know, it's more Yakuza. You're going to spend a good bit of time watching cutscenes and all that. And it's all in Japanese. Voiceovers, no English dubs just yet. They haven't, I don't think they've announced the dates for any sort of update, adding some other stuff, but that is kind of the place for that right now. But that is on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. And it's also on Game Pass. So if you have Xbox or PC Game Pass, you can check that out. And yeah, it's not supposed to be a super long one of these, but you can probably play more than the like 10 hours I've been hearing labeled as how long it could be. So it's probably one to check out, especially if you're playing Like a Dragon and want to get infinite wealth and want to see more of what Kiryu was doing before and during and, you know, after he shows up in that game. So yeah, that's neat. Looking forward to playing some more of that. The other game I'm playing, also on Game Pass, Forza Motorsport, the rebooted Forza game that I'm liking all right so far, but it's also, they're trying some new things here, especially with the way that they let you outfit cars. So when you get a car, you can't necessarily just, if you have the money, like upgrade a bunch of its parts and sort of, you know, upgrade its rating right away. You have to drive with that car a good bit to level it up. There's a car level for each car. So the, you know, you get one to start with to do some races, but then immediately they make you buy a new one to do any other further sort of career events stuff. And the way they lay it out in the career section is not great. It's just a list of stuff, and it's not really like, hey, these are ones you can do with the cars you have, which I think I have the starter car, then there's some superpowered thing that I got for some reason, I don't know, but I bought a more like hatchback kind of car for the series of events that I was working on. And yeah, the other thing they do besides just the RPG stuff is before each of the career races, they kind of guilt you into doing practice, which you're not really doing laps to get times to rank you with the other racers. It's more for you to get familiar with the track kind of stuff, and you'll get, you know, ratings for each section you go through. It's like, here's how you did, like following the ideal line, that kind of stuff. And you get more XP the better the score you get, though. On the practice, there's other cars, so sometimes you literally can't do the line, so you'll get, you know, ones or, you know, worse score, you know, bad scores. They're like, oh, you didn't do so well. And it's like, yeah, because there are people in the way, you know, partly kind of racing and screwing around with that kind of stuff. But, you know, you get XP, so they generally ask you to do like a lap under a certain time and then finish at least three laps, and you can kind of duck out after that. So it's a decent way of like getting you familiar with the track instead of racing it cold. But at a certain point, they let you pick where you start on the grid outside of maybe the top couple of spots if you didn't do well enough. I don't know, but they basically let you place anywhere. So a couple of races, I've had like 24 total cars on it, and I put myself in the back and sort of easily won each time. So it hasn't been that like challenging of a game, and so I've not been super drawn into it. It just feels like more of the same. It still looks really nice and all that. They have HDR going in some way in that game, especially when it's, you know, getting a lot of like sunset ish kind of light that's blaring on the windshield. It makes it hard to see, especially see some of the driving line stuff. So yeah, that's a perfectly fine one of those. Nothing amazing that I've seen so far. I've not tried the online stuff because I believe they're essentially emulating the Gran Turismo Sports stuff, where they're trying to encourage people to drive, you know, with actual like race etiquette, that kind of stuff. And so that seems neat, but I just have not had any interest in bothering with that. So that's Forza Motorsport, kind of Some interesting ideas, but I don't know the executions there yet. Maybe they'll make it better. But also, this has been the game that I've been leaving in quick resume, and every time I start it, launches to where it was, and then the game crashes, and then it makes me start over again. That or it just does a fresh boot, because I guess if it gets an update that cancels out your quick resume. And I'm not leaving it like in the middle of a race or anything. It's usually I finish one race and I don't want to move on to the next one for that little series that I'm doing of like three or four races. And so I'm like, I'll come back to this later. And then when I come back later, it's reset it. So I have to go back through the menus to start it back up again. Luckily, I don't have to restart. It just continues back where you're at. So that's Forza Motorsport. It's fine. And the other game I've been playing a good bit of this weekend is Euro Truck Simulator 2. The Halloween event is ending on, I think, Tuesday. So I've been trying to get that done. I am most of the way there. I think I have 8 or 9 of 13 deliveries I have to do. So I'll probably do a few more here tonight after the podcast. But yeah, I had a nasty one here before we started as I was making the delivery and accidentally like clipped on the edge of this barrier that just caused the entire truck to vibrate violently until I was like 95% damaged. Couldn't find a way to like unshake it loose until it just finally broke it. And then I fell off the bridge somehow, this like overpass. It was weird. And I was trying to find a way to get back on and could not find anything. There's barriers all around. And I found a place that I could. And it was literally, I had a bunch of invisible barriers around it. So I couldn't get back on. So I just paid the money to have them tow me and cancel the delivery. Tow me to a place I can get fixed. And they canceled the delivery along the way. So that cost like 60,000 euros. A little annoying, but I'll survive. So that's been pretty much it for me. So, Brandon, what have you been doing?
Yeah, so what I've been doing is I've basically been playing two games that could not be further from each other in tone or much of anything. First and foremost, I've been playing Alan Wake 2. This, of course, is the sequel to Remedy's Alan Wake that came out about 13-some-odd years ago. And sort of became like a huge cult hit, but kind of remained dormant for a while. They, you know, did, you know, Remedy did some other projects. Specifically, they did Control, which ends up not only taking place in what is the Alan Wake universe, but ends up sort of tying a lot of Remedy's output together into a single verse, I guess you could say. The thing about Alan Wake is that Alan Wake himself is an author. And he made his fame writing a series of crime fiction books starring a character named Alex Casey. And Alex Casey is basically, with just a complete, you know, despite the name, he's basically Max Payne. You know, 100%. He acts like Max Payne. He talks like Max Payne. And you know, that was sort of like the first hint that they were trying to sort of tie the Remedy verse into a single thread. But in the first Alan Wake game, he basically, him and his wife, because he's hit like a writer's block, they go to this place called Bright Falls, which is in Washington. And while they're there, they take up residence in a cabin that's in the middle of a place called Cauldron Lake. And while he's there, Wake discovers that the lake is inhabited by some sort of entity. He calls it the dark entity, or the dark thing. He calls it a couple of different names. And eventually what happens is that he discovers that he starts finding pieces of a manuscript that is apparently written by him, but he does not ever remember writing. And it eventually comes about that he finds out that the entity at the bottom of the lake has the power to manipulate reality, somehow connected to Wake himself. And Wake discovers that, well, long story short, Wake manages to more or less contain the entity at the bottom of the lake, but it's in turn, he ends up being trapped at the bottom of it for about 13 years. So by the time Alan Wake 2 starts, he's still down there. And while he's down there, he discovers that he can, his writing can actually manipulate the quote unquote dark place that he's been stuck in this whole time. But at the same time, the dark entity can also mess with the stuff he's written and twist it towards its own ends. And by doing that, he manages to escape from the dark place and into the real world. And so the game starts off, you actually don't play Alan Wake for a chunk of this game. Instead, you play this woman named Saga Anderson, who's a FBI agent who has been sent to Brightfall because there seems to be a murder in what at that point they had considered to be like a serial killer. And the latest victim is Nightingale, who is a character from the last game, who was like an ATF agent who like dropped off the face of the earth and then started messing with Wake because he got a delusion in his head that Wake was out to get him or something or other. And it's there they discover that there isn't actually one serial killer. It's more of like a cult. And they call it the Cult of the Tree, which is essentially like a sort of urban legend that the people in Bright Falls use to like keep kids from going into the woods at night. Like, don't wander off into the woods or the Cult of the Tree will get you. Why they're there, she manages to go into what's called an overlap, where she's able to go into like a part of the dark place. And while she's down there, she manages to find Alan Wake, and then they both come back out. And the rest of the game is Saga trying to put the rest of the pieces of the case together. And at the same time, it's talking about Alan, how he managed to escape from the dark place the first time, and how he's trying to stay from like having the dark entity drag him back down again. Gameplay-wise, it keeps pretty much all the stuff that the first game did. The combat is based around going against enemies that are covered in shadow that has to be done away with using a flashlight, or usually a flashlight. Also, you'll use like road flares or flashbang grenades, basically anything that produces light. And then you can actually attack them with a pistol, shotgun, stuff like that. Alan, on the other hand, has some new stuff that he does. While he's in the dark place, he discovers a lamp, basically. It's like an old antique lamp without a lampshade on. It's just a lamp stand and the bulb at the end of it. He discovers that while he's in the dark place, he can use this thing to absorb light from like other brightly lit lighting places, like street lights or things of that nature. And what this does is not only does it let him see this light, it also allows him to manipulate the area around him so that he can put this light up and it'll open new areas or it'll redo the whole area sometimes in really fascinating ways. There's some like pretty neat like maze puzzles that come into being where manipulating this light will open up like walls and stuff. But there's another mechanic too they've added that's also equally fascinating. So both Saga and Alan have this thing called Headspace. In Saga's case, it's called the Case Room, and it's where she has, like, amongst other things there, she's got places where, like, she can, because again, more of those pages from what Alan's manuscript are showing up again. And so she stores away those manuscript pages to read later. There's also like where she can upgrade, find places where you can like listen to like radio broadcasts or television commercials you've seen, like episodes of Night Springs, which was something that was a big deal in the other games, because Alan was a writer on that show for a while. But the big sort of thing involved is the case wall. And the case wall is where As you're sort of going through the mystery of like the cult of the tree and the murders and all that stuff, you'll gather up evidence. And using this evidence, you will put all this evidence up on a wall so that you can begin like connecting bits of evidence to come to conclusions. These involves like various individuals you come in contact with, photographs that you come across, pieces of Alan's manuscript that you find, and you end up connecting all these things with red string to sort of come to the conclusion that you need to solve the various cases. Alan has something similar, but he has something called the storyboard, which is literally, it's a storyboard, like you're writing for a book or a movie or whatever. But what's neat here is that as he's going through the dark place, he can pick up bits and pieces of inspiration. And using this inspiration, he can then go back and rewrite the reality of various areas that he's been in the dark place to move forward in the story. So like, for example, while he's in the dark place, which in this case, the dark place sort of takes on the appearance of like midtown Manhattan. He goes down into the subway tunnels and he comes across like a collapsed tunnel. And he discovers that if he adds in a bit of inspiration, he can actually find ways to manipulate the space. So like, for one thing, he's trying to, much like Saga, he's trying to get a hold of the cult. And so if he puts in the inspiration for the cult, it'll turn into like an altar that the cult uses, which will then spring up the idea that he needs to go and see if he can find a ritual that is used to cross over into the other side. And so he has to like go about and find various pieces of information to find out what the ritual is. So something like that. And yeah, it's just keep in mind that this is a Remedy game, which means that there's a bunch of like full motion video related stuff that shows up. It's starring all the actors that play the characters in the game. Of course, Sam Lake, the guy who not only is the one of the writers for Max Payne, but also the guy whose face was used for Max Payne, is in there. And he actually plays a character named Alex Casey, who is Saga Anderson's partner. And yes, the name is important because his name is the same as the character that White came up with, and he ends up getting, you know, a lot of shit for it. But it's funny because one of the first things that happens in the dark place is that Alan Wake suddenly finds himself on what looks like a talk show, and the guy who's sitting next to him is Sam Lake. And Sam Lake is like, and the guy who's the talk show host, he says, "What do you think that, you know, he looks like Alex Casey?" And he looks over at Sam Lake, and Sam Lake does that scrunched up look that they use to map on to Max Payne's face. It's kind of funny. But yeah, it's a fantastic game. Really good game. Unlike the first game, they really do go all in on the survival horror aspect. So expect a lot more horror and jump scares and stuff this time around. But yeah, it's a great game. Love it. And next to that, I'm also playing Thirsty Suitors, which could not be more different from the other game. And that game is basically about you playing a young woman named Jay, who's South Asian American, and she's coming back to her. Hold on, just a second. She's coming back to her hometown after leaving, basically on not best terms 3 years ago. And she's coming back because she like ran off with a woman who was like 10 years her senior and convinced her to cut her off from her family. But she's coming back and she's trying to rebuild all the bridges that she burned and. Amongst other things, that means she's trying to rebuild the relationship she has with her parents, with her sister, and with all of her exes. And it's funny because it's one of those games where it's like various issues, but it very well matter. Much of the game's like moving around and you know going around by skateboarding because a lot of the like traversable areas are like skateboarding areas where you basically use them, do like Tony Hawk stuff. But the actual like trying to make up with people is like done in the format of like RPG battles, where there's like a lot of dialogue and stuff between all the individual characters. And it's really like drenched in like South Asian, you know, Indian and Sri Lankan culture. And it's really fascinating because, you know, that like there were definitely times it's like, is this like in Canada somewhere? Or is it like in the Pacific Northwest? And I find out it's in Washington. So yeah, it's like right in that area where like the US and Canada start to slowly meld together. But yeah, it's actually really good. It's not very long. It's a short game, but it's a very fun game and very enjoyable. And it's got a lot of great characters that you'll come to really like. And yeah, it's good. It's good stuff. And, but yeah, that's what I've been playing.
How about you, Dana?
Yeah, for me, it hasn't been anything outrageously different. I finished Spider-Man 2, over the course of the week. And, just, you know, a whole lot more Spider-Man. Just it's just crazy how Insomniac continues to top themselves. You know, I thought Miles Morales was better than Spider-Man 2018, and I think Spider-Man 2 is better than both those games. And it's really just a matter of, like, how they, you know, pick each other up. I do have to mention, though, that the Platinum for this game was a little bit more annoying, mainly due to the fact that, you know, you don't have New Game Plus right at the get-go. And you don't have the ability to replay missions unless you manually saved before every mission and done them all separately. The trophies that I had trouble with were mostly like with getting kills with certain moves. For example, the ones that I had struggled with were the Surge trophy, where you have to get 25 kills, or not 25 kills, but use symbiote moves during a Surge, which you do by pressing both the left and right sticks. The other one I had trouble with was getting, I think it was another 25 kills by using the web line, which is a stealth move where, you know, either Miles or Peter can, from where they're perched, they can go ahead and shoot a web that he can use to stand on and, you know, use it for easier stealth. And I did all the stealth missions or the stealth side quests early on in the game. So there was really no opportunity for me to really do that. And the way I ended up like cheesing that one was just going into a random crime, using Miles, and then using my invisibility before using those webs. And that was the way I got it. So it took me a whole lot longer than it really should have. Like, I think I've clocked in at around 35 hours of the game, but I think I beat it at around like 32. So I spent 3 hours just grinding to get these trophies out of the way. Cause I don't know. I just really wanted to get that done, and normally Insomniac does a good job with their trophies. But yeah, like overall, it's been a heck of an experience. Like this year alone, you know, we got sequels to Zelda, which was my 2017 Game of the Year. We got a sequel to Spider-Man, which was my 2018 Game of the Year. You know, a sequel to Octopath and all that, and it's just crazy like how this year has been. Aside from that, played a little bit more Super Mario Bros. Wonder. I plan on beating the game tonight, and by beating, I just mean rolling the credits. I know that there's a whole lot more stuff to do after you, quote unquote, like, you know, roll credits. So look forward to getting that done and hopefully having a review done sometime this week. And then moving back to the PS5, I got back into Final Fantasy 16. That's a game that I've been off and on just because like I've had various things happen through life. But yeah, like my goal of beating both Spider-Man 2 and Mario Bros. Wonder before the release of Super Mario RPG this Friday is going to happen, so I'm looking forward to that. And that's it.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. And we had Mass Effect's and 7 Day happen this week, which included this weird little series of teaser videos that people figured out the various like ARG clues that they had. Which led to like three, I think, chunks of a teaser trailer that they eventually posted the whole thing, which seems to show some sort of character of sorts wearing an N7 jacket, walking in, turning around like they're gonna shoot somebody or something.
Yeah,
wearing a cool cloak and all that. So
yeah, the fact that they're wearing like an N7. Related piece of clothing is a lot of people think that's significant because that the N7 is what, you know, that was Shepard's call sign more or less, and so people are thinking like, is this Shepard or is this someone related to Shepard or someone like this? Some people have suggested that the individual might be an Asari because the helmet is looks like something that would be designed for like an Asari agent. Yeah. But yeah, it's all very, very vague. And we should also point out that BioWare has made it clear that it's still going to be a while before we see this game. So
yeah. And I believe the code stuff tied to this mentions Andromeda. So the thought is that this will be sort of some sort of Shepard crew doing something, going to Andromeda to help them, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which could be neat.
Yeah. Well, I doubt that like any of the Shepard crew, like of all of them, the only one who's probably still going to be alive is Liara, because we've seen flashes of her and she's, you know, very clearly going into her matron stage. So, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Also keep in mind that, at the end of Mass Effect 3, they lose the mass relay. So it takes them all a while to rebuild that stuff. Because otherwise, if they have to still deal with all the issues that come with faster than light travel, like time dilation and stuff like that.
Yeah. But yeah, that's gives people more things to think about. But yeah, they're mainly focused on Dragon Age at the moment. That still is a ways off.
A no-show, more or less. And, they just laid off a bunch of people. So,
yeah
I'm kind of getting worried about that game's fate.
Yeah, so.
Like, keep in mind, their two last big releases have been huge flops. So, for the record, I do like Mass Effect Andromeda and, fixed all this stuff. It's a very solid game. But it was the start of a new story, and that story, as much as I liked it, it just wasn't as compelling as the first one was. So, and then of course after that, there was Anthem. Anthem was an absolute disaster. So, I don't know. I still want to believe in BioWare, but BioWare doesn't seem to believe in me. So,
yeah. So, there you go. That's your BioWare news for the moment. We'll see if we get anything else from any other stuff in the near future. But for now, we got some other stuff to look at. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Elon Musk has done a hell of a lot to mess up Twitter. And especially its API stuff for people to use, Twitter's API to do some cool stuff, like the one of its arguably most popular uses of that stuff has been for all of the consoles and PC platforms to be able to, seamlessly upload screenshots and videos to Twitter to share with people. That kind of stuff, especially in the wake of PlayStation sort of doing the share button on the DualShock 4 at the PS4's launch, making that sort of a core part of the system UI and all that. And, PS5 has done some cool stuff to expand on that a bit with better ways to edit videos and screenshots and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, of late, this Elon Musk taking over Twitter has kind of caused a lot of chaos, especially raising the cost to keep using that stuff. And so Xbox earlier this year sort of dropped that as a thing back in April. That was not as big of a deal because Xbox, I don't think, has ever really made that a seamless of a thing that, PlayStation has. But yeah, there's been a sort of little news post on your PS5, PS4 consoles that says that as of November 13th, so Monday, the integration with X, formerly known as Twitter, will no longer function on PS5 and PS4 consoles. This includes the ability to view any content published on X on PS5 and PS4 and the ability to post and view content, trophies, and other gameplay-related activities on X directly from PS5 and PS4, or link an X account to do that. So yeah, that's Extremely disappointing for that stuff, but you will still be able to do that stuff as you can use the PlayStation mobile app to have your gameplay or screenshots uploaded to that on your phone, and then from there download it to post to the Twitter app on your phone. It's a bit more of an annoying way to do that, but you can still kind of do that. So yeah, still somewhat easier ways to do that, but yeah, it sort of handicaps the features a decent bit. But you know, you can also at any point just put a thumbstick in your PlayStation and export screenshots and videos to it to put on your PC and do with it what you will from there, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that all still is possible, but doing it directly from the PlayStation will no longer be as easy to do from there. So yeah, that's disappointing. And fuck Elon Musk for fucking that all up.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously pretty lame news. I use this quite a bit, whether it's to share a screenshot or to, you know, pull screenshots for the various reviews and content that we do on the site. And yeah, there you can use, you know, the app to do this, and that's still easier than, you know, what you mentioned by getting a thumb drive and doing whatever that way. But at the end of the day, like, it sucks to lose a feature that, you know, you've had since day one. And, you know, the funny thing is here is it's not like PlayStation or Xbox wanted to do this. It's that Elon made it harder, and that's pretty lame. I did see an article somewhere else that Elon's looking into that, and I'm like, there's really nothing to look into. Just don't do what you're doing. But it is what it is.
Yeah, he looks into a lot of stuff. Doesn't mean he's going to actually do anything. And usually that's conspiracy political stuff for people point out things like that. So, yeah.
I get that. But, like, at the same time, he's also someone that puts games in the UI of his cars. And, you know, obviously, like, he doesn't, like... Well, yes, he does speak for Tesla for himself, but at the end of the day, like, these are good, innovative ideas going into cars, and, you know, it's just unfortunate that, you know, he owns another company, and he still can't, like, get it right when there was nothing wrong with it to begin.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't expect when Elon says, like, oh, looking into this, that he's going to do anything if he can't get, you know, Xbox or PlayStation to pay his exorbitant fees for that stuff. He'll just act like he cares and be like, oh, they didn't want to do anything. It's like, all right, whatever. It's all your fault, essentially. But yeah, that's one thing that's happening on Twitter. The other thing that's been going on for a while, people on Twitter and across the internet have been indulging in rampant speculation on what's going on with Grand Theft Auto 6. So that's what we assume the title's going to be. Mm-hmm. There's been some leaks here and there. Mm-hmm. But what people have been thinking through potential conspiracy stuff, like, oh, they're going to do something for Rocktober. Rockstar Games does some event stuff in October every year, but like, oh, they'll announce it here, and then some people are saying, like, oh, they could have announced it this past week. You know, technically, it's already been announced. They mentioned that they would be working on a new Grand Theft Auto as a part of their financial news a ways back. But they, in response of that potential leaking nets, like, they would announce something this week. They, on the Twitter account through from Sam Hauser, they say, like, we are very excited to let you know that in early December, we will release the first trailer for the next Grand Theft Auto. We look forward to many more years of sharing these experiences with all of you. And that's sort of part of a Twitter thread talking about the old games and the way that Rockstar Games was founded and all that. And it's like, okay. But yeah, this seems to suggest we've only got a few more weeks and till we get to see the first trailer, which is probably not going to have that much in it. If we go by tradition for Grand Theft Auto sort of reveal trailers. But yeah, your immediate speculation would be like, oh, maybe it'll be part of the Game Awards, since like, yeah, that could be, but also the last game sold 150, 80 million copies, whatever it is. They don't need the Game Awards to announce anything. They can just post it on Twitter or on, you know, TV commercials or whatever. They can post it at any point that they want and get all of the attention. And it would maybe not be a good idea to have that as part of the Game Awards and, you know, piss off every other developer and publisher that, mm-hmm. you know, gets their reveals on the show. To immediately get overshadowed and forgotten in the wake of this game. So maybe will be, who knows, but I'm going to say they'll do it whenever they want, maybe around where the show is going to happen, but not during it. Or maybe they'll reveal it beforehand and then have something during the show, but they're not really reliant on Jeff Keighley to get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where we're at with that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's kind of a weird position where, first of all, GTA doesn't need any sort of extra marketing. You know, like, first of all, they can afford it, and, you know, whenever Rockstar even tweets, it's automatically viral. They have that Nintendo, you know, like, way of doing things about them. They beat to the sound of their own drum. At the same time, while I can see it being a Game Awards thing, you know, you don't want to put yourself or others in a position where you're just going to hope that every world premiere trailer at the Game Awards is going to be Grand Theft Auto, because every game that's not Grand Theft Auto is going to be disappointing just due to this fact. And, you know, you don't want to do that. And at the same time, I'm pretty sure if there was a conversation, it was done months and months ago. You know, maybe Keighley even already knew that this was going to happen. And yeah, like, at the same time, you just hope that if they do show the trailer close to the Game Awards, hopefully it isn't too close, because again, this trailer is going to be the most important thing released this month. So I think you want to avoid that in respect to the other games being honored, because at the end of the day, it's a celebration.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's more speculation about GTA 6. That's going to now be all over the place for the next few weeks. So it's a great move on Rockstar's part.
Mm-hmm.
Cause they ensure that people are going to wonder if every day is going to be the one where they're going to say more. Because, yeah, they don't say, like, this is when we're going to reveal it. They just say this is when we're going to put out the first trailer. So they could very well reveal it next week and then be like, well, tune into the trailer on December 3rd, whatever day they want it to be. So, yeah, that's going to make the next couple of weeks interesting.
I do think it's a little unfortunate that they said early December. I mean, like, if it were me, you know, again, if it were me, I would announce it on, like, New Year's Eve, put it on the Vegas Sphere, and go crazy from there. But, you know, it'll still be crazy.
Yeah. GTA's bigger than the Sphere.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need any physical or special event showcase to be part of for that, but yeah, let's get to a game that got delayed. Fantasy Life I, The Girl Who Steals Time, the second game in that sort of action RPG life sim kind of series, was supposed to be out this year, just had a generic 2023 date, but Level 5 has posted that they're changing that to 2024, and that they will have a release date during an online event they're calling Level 5 Vision 2023-2,
mm-hmm.
Roman numeral 2, this event they're having on November 29th, that they will be probably posting a bunch of new trailers and information about the various games, because they have a handful of games they've got in the works for the next year or two. And so they'll probably reveal a bunch of that stuff. And they're saying a release date or maybe a time frame. I don't know how specific they're going to get, if this is like, we're not going to be out in 2023, but it'll be out, you know, January 18th, 2024, something like that. Maybe it'll be that close, not as long of a delay as it seems, but this is a game I'm looking forward to. And yeah, it's not surprising that we're at, you know, early November here, and a game that just had 2023 as its release date is not going to make it out this year. So,
yeah, I think at this point it was going to be a foregone conclusion anyway. The main thing is, though, while it's been delayed to 2024, I hope for everything that it's not during that, you know, those 3 weeks where we have Yakuza and Persona and all those other games come out at the same time. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they should either be early January or March, because February is full of stuff, because the second Final Fantasy remake game is in there. That's the end of February. We got Yakuza, Persona, the
Grand Life,
other, like RPGs. Yeah.
Blue, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of stuff like that. It's like, you know, February is not that big of a month, guys. You don't need to release them all in that month. Mm-hmm. But that's their plan.
Mm.
But yeah, speaking of games that have actually come out, Super Mario Brothers Wonder, Nintendo had their financial stuff, end of the financial quarter, so they're talking about numbers and all that. And we got our first numbers for Super Mario Brothers Wonder, that it sold 4.3 million units within the first 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty good news. Makes it the fastest-selling Super Mario-related title. So that's pretty impressive for that, especially as a game that's, you know, we didn't really know about until maybe 2 months beforehand, something like that. It was not, it's not had like a long run-up or anything like, you know, Super Mario Odyssey or any of these other games. So that's pretty impressive and shows that there's still at least some appetite for this stuff as we get into the late Switch era. But yeah, that's some pretty good news for there. And yeah, they also revealed, among other things, that the Switch has reached 132 million units. I think 132.46 million units sold so far. So yeah, that makes it easily the best Nintendo hardware selling since the DS, which is sitting at 154. I think the PS2 is at least a few million above that. I think they have not revealed what the supposed final numbers on that are, so we're still kind of in that vague. It could be 160, it could be more than that, who knows. But yeah, that's a great news on that. What else do they have here? Tears of the Kingdoms reached 19.5 million units sold. That's a lot, though. I thought it sold like 18 million in the first month, so maybe that slowed down a little bit. Pikmin 4 reached 2.6 million units sold, which is the best-selling game in that series.
Yeah.
So they've been having some successful titles.
Oh, yeah.
This year, so that's great.
Awesome.
Yeah, Nintendo obviously had a huge year. A lot of people have Zelda as their game of the year, but you know, at the same time, we've seen a lot of great press for games like Baldur's Gate 3, as well as Alan Wake and Spider-Man 2. So yeah, it'll be really competitive. And like, even if Zelda doesn't win Game of the Year, I think Nintendo is definitely has to be in discussion for Developer of the Year. Like, you know, you have Zelda, you have Mario, you have Metroid Prime Remastered. A Fire Emblem came out at the beginning of the year. They've been, like, this year has silently been, like, one of the best years in the Switch's very long history at this point, so. And it shows with the 113 million units. Like, there's a lot of talk about the next system, but if Nintendo keeps releasing good content, they'll keep buying this system. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they are doing some, they're shaking it up for Black Friday. Instead of a Mario Kart 8 bundle, they're doing a Smash Brothers bundle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we'll get weird in 2023.
Yeah, I think that one is even an OLED bundle. Correct me if I'm wrong. So I don't think that that's ever been done yet.
Yeah. But yeah, there's your Nintendo sales update. Sony has had some news here, particularly that Spider-Man 2 has sold 5 million in its first 11 days, which is really good numbers there.
Oh, yeah.
That's better than where Mario was at. So That seems to be selling better than the new Super Mario Brothers game,
mm-hmm.
Which is probably not something people would expect to see. Maybe in the longer term that might change, but for now, Spider-Man's off to a great start, especially being only on the PS5. And yeah, as part of that, they announced that the PS5 is currently at 46.6 million units sold, which is doing very well, especially they're going into this holiday season very confident that they have the most stock available that they've ever had for PS3 or PS5. So they're expecting it to do very well with the new PS5 out there and the old one and Spider-Man bundles and Call of Duty bundles and all that kind of stuff. So they should do pretty well this holiday season with that stuff and Spider-Man out there as well. So yeah, everybody looks to be doing good, at least with Nintendo and Sony. So there you go on that front. And yeah, they also had some other news here that they have delayed about half of their current lineup of live service games. Of course, we don't really know too much about what those games are. If that includes which ones, like any of the handful we've seen so far, that stuff seems like it's maybe not too far off for that stuff, but I don't think any of those had really any dates yet. But yeah, Marathon seems like it's probably not going to be happening for a while. And yeah, these delays are beyond the initial planned fiscal year 2025, which ends March 2026. They were hoping to have 12 of them out by then, but due to, delays and just normal stuff that happens, that stuff has slipped a little bit. So we'll have to see if they're kind of wanting to focus more on the stuff that's closer and see how that stuff goes and adjust things accordingly, but might be wanting to spread them out a little bit more than they were hoping to have to. So, but yeah, that seems to be your Sony financial news of the moment. So there you go on that front there. So, and yeah, let's get to some bad financial news. Ubisoft has announced that they have laid off, a total of 124 employees.
Mm-hmm.
98 were based in Canada, roughly about 2% of the company's Canadian workforce. That includes administrative and IT workers, some of whom were employed at the Hybrid VFX studio, company that which worked on, Disney shows like Ahsoka and The Mandalorian. So certainly not, slouches there, but yeah, it kind of shows that Ubisoft is in a weird period here, as they've got stuff finally releasing for the first time in a while. They've still got stuff coming out here over the next couple of months with the Avatar game, the new Prince of Persia, sort of Metroid-like, coming out in January, I think that is. And yeah, got some promising stuff, but this seems to be a lot of the bureaucratic part of the workforce. I don't know if that's all of them, but yeah. Just adding more to the long list of layoffs that have been happening here over the last few months for that. That shows that there's still a lot of turmoil going on, especially as we head into the holiday season where companies tend to maybe beef up a little bit for holiday work. But yeah, we'll see if there are any more of these, but yeah, Ubisoft is the odd man out this week for announcing their layoffs. So there you go on that news. And let's see what else we got here. We got a game here that's been canceled. Revenant Hill. You might have remembered this from like one of the State of Plays in the past few months.
Bad.
Yeah, which is from a co-op studio called The Glory Society, headed up by Scott Benson and his partner, Bethany Hawkenberry. And he basically posted a Twitter thread basically saying, so over the past 12 months or so, I got very sick and it didn't go away. Eventually, I was diagnosed with severe heart failure, most likely from a virus. It will continue to greatly limit me for the foreseeable future. And as such, I've had to stop working in the manner I once did. And then quote tweeted the announcement from the official Glory Society account, basically saying that, you know, they've had people on the team with some serious health issues that necessitated two key members stepping away from the project indefinitely. And as a small team like this that, you know, is working as a co-op, they were not people that were easily replaceable. So they all kind of came to the mutual agreement to suspend operations and essentially ending the development of Revenant Hill. So, yeah, that's an unfortunate way for that promising project to end. But, you know, I think it's more important that Scott Benson takes care of himself, works on hopefully getting to as good of a place as he can. I don't know the details of his particular issues and whether he can get to a place of, you know, 100% or whatever 100% can be at the moment. But, you know, we wish him and his wife all the best in dealing with this, though it will not stop him from posting random shit on Twitter and Blue Sky. If you follow him, he's a good follow for just posting the weird, you know, funny stuff he thinks of. So, yeah, that's some shitty news, but, you know, people's health is more important than a game. And, yeah, I've seen some of the people that also were at the Glory Society basically be like, well, I guess I'm looking for a job now. So, you know, posting recommendations and whatnot for places to look at work in. So, yeah, essentially cancellation of a game, a shutdown of a studio, and yeah, hopefully we have some better news for Scott in the future. But yeah, there's your update on what's going to happen with Revenant Hill.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go on that. And didn't want to end on downer notes this week, so I found a couple other stories we could talk about to be bring the mood back up a bit. Nintendo has decided that the Super Mario Brothers movie did well enough that they should work on a new one.
Did well enough. It's one of the most profitable films of all time.
Yeah. And they have decided to work on a new movie with Avi Arad's company, Arad Productions, who has worked on a number of things over the years. He was a producer on Spider-Man 2, Iron Man, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Also worked on some video game adaptations like the Uncharted movie and Borderlands, whenever the hell that comes out. But this is going to be a live-action The Legend of Zelda movie. Nintendo's Japanese account posted a message from Miyamoto on it in English, saying, "This is Miyamoto. I have been working on the live-action film of The Legend of Zelda for many years now with Avi Arad-san, who has produced many mega-hit films," which is, I guess, a thing you can say. "I have asked Avi-san to produce this film with me, and we have now officially started development of the film with Nintendo itself heavily involved in the production. It will take time until its completion, but I hope you look forward to seeing it." So, yeah, that's just basically all the details really there. They do have a director attached to this, Wes Ball, who worked on the Maze Runner movies, as well as the upcoming Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes that just got trailers recently released. So he's signed on to direct this film, so kind of catching him before he becomes a very expensive director, if the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes does really well. So yeah, this will be theatrical distribution handled by Sony Pictures Entertainment. So Sony's got their mitts on this. So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's kind of all the details, as people on the internet have posted, like, here's who should be these characters and what's, you know, what game story they should adapt. And it's like, I don't know. You mm-hmm. gotta pick your poison. Really, they're not really, like, there's a huge difference in a lot of these stories. It's kind of the general, the princess gets kidnapped by Ganon, or something happens to her from Ganon, or Ganon just does some shit, and Zelda mm-hmm. and Link has to save the day by solving lots of puzzles and beating dungeons. They probably won't go through a lot of that in the movie, but who knows? But them going through live action is at least an interesting wrinkle versus kind of sticking to the Super Mario Brothers thing and kind of staying CG. But that kind of then puts a lot of work on design and costume and all that. How well you make everybody feel like an actual part of the world of Hyrule. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at on that. So not really mm-hmm. much else to say. That's happening. Maybe it'll be good. Who knows? But we probably won't see anything for a few years on that. But the SAG-AFTRA strike is over, so they can at least start working on that stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, the conversation about whether a Legend of Zelda is good or bad, you know, we can't have it. We have to see a trailer. Even then, that'll still be too early. But, like, based on the stuff we know, you know, if Shigeru Miyamoto is behind it, then I have no reason to doubt it. Although, you know, he does put out some blunders of his own, but he hasn't done it. We'll have to see there. And then, you know, you can talk what you want about Avi Arad, but at the same time, all of these movies listed, despite how good or bad they are blockbuster hit films. So, you know, that's what Nintendo wants here. Like, you want to make some money. You have Sony involved as well, and, you know, Sony's going to want their cut. But what's interesting to me here is Wes Ball. You know, I personally don't care about the Planet of the Apes movies. I don't care for Maze Runner either. But if you were to look at the way those movies look, just the environments and then the set pieces are absolutely fantastic. And that, to me, is a good foundation for what you want a Legend of Zelda live movie to look like. Granted, like, I have, you know, my own qualms about it being live action. I'm one of the people that wanted Zelda to be a Studio Ghibli-esque anime film if they decided to do a film, especially, like, after playing Tears of the Kingdom. And, like, you know, Brandon beat it. Like, Tears of the Kingdom has a lot of crazy set-piece moments that are going to be timeless, you know, from now on to forever. So mm-hmm. There's that with it. But at the same time, as Chris just mentioned, like, there's nothing overly complicated about a Zelda story or most Nintendo stories to begin with. Typically going to be about saving the princess, and you're going to go through some sort of hero's journey. And those are pretty hard to get wrong. The thing is, Zelda has existed for over 30, you know, going on 35 years now. And we're used to it being done a certain way, especially with the fact that Link doesn't talk. So once we find out who's casted as Link, like, we're going to judge how well that guy acts. And at the same time, it's like, what kind of dialogue can you possibly give Link? Because the one time Link got dialogue for his animated TV show in the late 80s, and that was a garbage fire. So, yeah. At the same time, you know, I'm excited. I'll look forward to more news when it comes. And the only thing that, you know, I'm semi-upset about is the fact that since they're not animated, I don't see, like, a Super Smash Brothers universe happening in the movies anytime soon. But, you know, one can hope.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's kind of the Zelda news there. Yeah. So, and the last thing we have here is that Valve went and announced a new Steam Deck
mm-hmm.
After like a year and a half of that thing being available in some form or another. They've announced the Steam mm-hmm. Deck OLED. So they have added a bright new OLED screen to the device. Mm-hmm. Seems to largely be the same outer hardware for the most parts that the current Steam Deck has, but kind of upgrading some bits and pieces inside to make it a bit more of like what the what they maybe wanted to have ready for the original Steam Deck, but you know, it not being, you know, a thing that was readily popular in any way, that they could not maybe get all of the parts that they would have wanted, especially at prices that would have made the cost of it all worthwhile. But this time around, they've announced two OLED models that'll be replacing the sort of middle and high tier Steam Deck options. For $549, they'll have the 512 gigabit Steam Deck OLED and the 1 terabyte model for $649. The 256 gigabit Steam Deck LCD will be the lowest model at $399. I guess for a limited time, they're selling a $679 1 terabyte Steam Deck OLED LE edition that has sort of transparent plastic around it. It looks like a dark gray transparent kind of thing. But they had a bunch of people up in Valve's building kind of looking at the playing the OLED and all that stuff. Apparently had this weird whole orb structure. They had a bunch of Steam Deck OLEDs hanging around these people in 360 degrees with stuff going on, I guess, to show off how bright the screen can get now. And yeah, they've made some improvements to the internals so that the screen has less of a bezel around it, so you'll be able to have more of a full picture there. So if you use a Steam Deck regularly, you can definitely tell that there's a good chunk of the glass screen that is not used for the games. For that, but yeah, it's an OLED screen, so it can do, I guess, HDR. It's an HDR screen, so there's that, so you can kind of have a little bit more vibrant color. The battery is bigger. It's a 50 watt hour battery versus a 40 watt hour, so they are saying it could generally have like about a 20 to 30% extra battery life. As a yeah, I might pull up the Steam page for all this as well, because that shows it off pretty well. And yeah, it's looking like the battery is a big deal. It's a little bit lighter, about 30 grams, which is probably not all that noticeable, but that's the whole thing. The speaker is apparently a little bit louder. The mic can now be used simultaneously as the headphone jack. I don't know what the hell that means. It's got upgraded Bluetooth, better connectivity, supports more audio codecs, and supports Wake via Bluetooth controller. And they apparently improved the responsiveness of the touch screen. Also apparently improved the resume time. So when you hit the power button to turn it back on and resume whatever you're doing, apparently made that faster. As I've noticed a lot, it's like sometimes it just doesn't want to turn on when you try to turn it on. It just like decides to be weird and you have to like hold down the power button to reset it kind of stuff. Yeah, improve the thermal performance, all that kind of stuff to make it a more responsive device, which is good to see. But yeah, that screen is a big deal because I believe it's also a 90 hertz screen, so games can run at 90 frames per second. Potentially, though, it also has options, I believe, so that you can run a game at 45 frames per second and then double it, or 30 frames per second and triple it to let it run maybe a little more smoothly at those lower frame rates. Same kind of thing you can do on high frame rate TVs and such, so yeah, this is looking like a big upgrade in terms of all the little things it's doing. I guess it also comes with a much longer power cable. 2.5 meters versus 1.5 in the original. And the original is pretty long as far as USB cables I've had. So there's that. And yeah, they've made some small changes to the externals. Like the power button is now an orange button. I'm guessing to make it more obvious which one it is when you're looking at the top of it. And I believe there's some other small stuff like that. I'm looking at the LE. They put the plastic under the sticks. All the stuff under the parts you're grabbing. The head of it is orange, as well as some more orange stuff in the fan areas. So that looks neat, but also it's $30 extra for that, so you don't necessarily have to. But yeah, they're talking a lot about the better stuff that's going on here. And apparently from what I've heard, you can, if you have a micro SD card in your current Steam Deck and you get one of these new ones, you can just put it into the new one and not have to re-download anything. Kind of just is able to read that and go. So that's pretty nice. But yeah, it looks like they're going to have pre-orders available for the new OLED Steam Decks on November 16th. Which I imagine will probably sell out pretty quickly, and you'll have to kind of essentially pre-order whenever you can actually buy it. But yeah, this, it sounds like a noticeable upgrade, especially compared to like the Switch OLED.
Oh yeah.
where the noticeability from like the second model Switch to the OLED was probably not huge, but for my launch model to the OLED was fairly noticeable, especially in like battery time, that kind of stuff. This seems to make some good improvements on that end, but yeah, still being like, I would want to get the $650 edition for this, but they don't, I don't think they have any like trade-in system. As far as I know, if I could trade this in and get, you know, $400 or something like that off of it, I would maybe consider upgrading to it. But otherwise, what's in here seems like pretty good upgrades, but I'll be fine with what I have for a Steam Deck, considering the price of it. So, yeah.
The really hard part about this, and you alluded to it, is the fact that only Valve sells it. You know, if this was available at GameStop or somewhere where I can go ahead and trade it in, no matter, even if they give me a pretty low valuation, I'd be more than happy to upgrade. But, you know, my Steam Deck right now doesn't enough. I haven't really even opened in quite a bit. So, yeah. Although, you know, the OLED does seem nice. And all of the upgrades to it look great. I just don't have a need for it right now.
Yeah. And their talk of, you know, the next generation Steam Deck, they're saying it'll be like maybe 2 years, 2 or 3 years off, as they're probably waiting for the components and such they want to kind of get to a good price for them to actually put a physical thing out. But yeah, if you're interested in a Steam Deck, this seems like a good time to jump in. If you have also been waiting for some price drops, they're basically selling off what they have left of the higher and lower tier Steam Decks, the LCD models. It's $449 for the 512 gigabit LCD. Because essentially the middle tier is dropping down to be the lower tier Steam Deck going forward. And the lower tier Steam Deck, the 64 gigabit LCD, is going to be at $349. So those are available to purchase at a discount of sorts. And at 512 is a good one to get, because that is about $200 off of what it normally is. They also have the docking station on sale as well for $79, I assume for the Black Friday holiday sale kind of stuff. So that might be a decent thing to get if you want to connect it to your TV. I think that's what that does. Yeah, so you can, if you want to connect it to your TV or whatever, that's the thing you can do with that. Maybe I'll get that with some bonus money I'm getting in the near future. That would be potentially nice. I don't know. But yeah, that's the new Steam Deck stuff. Seems like pretty positive reviews from all the stuff I've been seeing. But also, I believe a lot of those people got those for free from Valve, so take that with a little bit of grain of salt. They have, from I can see, there's GameStop must be selling some of these because they seem to have refurbished ones.
Mm-hmm.
So you can potentially, they have that 64 gigabit refurbished for $279.
Yeah.
So if you do have a GameStop, you can potentially trade them in. I don't know.
Maybe.
They might just be a place where Valve is kind of offloading some of their refurbished stock.
Mm-hmm.
To sell to other people, but yeah, that's the Valve news
mm-hmm.
of the week. So that's pretty neat to see, but definitely is not going to be a thing for me unless they somehow are willing to take in my Steam Deck and, you know, refurbish it or whatever for
mm-hmm.
selling to somebody else. But yeah, I even paid for mine this past year. With holiday money covering about half the cost to make it more affordable for me. So, yeah, I'm going to stick with that for as long as I can, and it's still doing just fine.
Mm.
The only thing I would do is maybe get a bigger micro SD to have more games on it, but even then I play like a handful of games on it, so it's not like I need that much space.
Mm.
But, yeah, there you go. That's going to do it for the show this week. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Brandon Dammer for joining this week.
Always.
What do we got coming out this week ahead? We got Broken Roads is out this week on the 14th. Super Crazy mm-hmm. Rhythm Castle, the Konami rhythm game.
Yep.
That they're putting out at the worst time. That's out November 14th. Flashback 2 might be out November 16th. That might have been delayed. I'm not sure. Mm. Yohane the Parhelion, Blaze in the Deep Blue. That's out the 16th. Naruto Cross Boruto. Ultimate Ninja Storm Connections is out the 17th. Persona 5 Tactica is the 17th. And Super Mario RPG is the 17th.
Mm.
So all the Japanese games are out on the 17th.
Mm-hmm.
As well as Black Friday stuff, we'll probably talk about Black Friday deal stuff on next week's show as we can. So that'll be a fun time, but yeah, we're getting into it. And oh yeah, also that Back to the Future DLC for Power Wash Simulator is out this week. That's my most anticipated thing. Wash up some DeLoreans and shit. So yeah, that's gonna do it for the show this week. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know to tune in and check out the show, and as well as select strangers that are also excited mm-hmm. for things like Super Mario RPG or whatever else is out there.
I'm definitely excited for Super Mario RPG.
Yeah. That stuff for Black Friday. Mm-hmm. Time to get some of those games you missed on the cheap.
Yep.
Even if it's not that great of a deal, but it'd be better than some. Nintendo, on their Black Friday thing, said we'll have a game on sale for more than 30% off.
Mm-hmm.
And the internet was destroyed.
Yep.
At the thought of Nintendo putting things on sale for more than 30%. They typically like 30% is all anybody needs.
Mm.
You're going to pay $41.99 for your full price games.
Mm.
I think it ended today, but Amazon Target had a buy to get one free sale. I was going to take advantage of it, realizing Friday is 2 weeks from now. Should I or should I not?
Yeah, there'll be stuff happening, but yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead, and we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.